session number 22083, reel 12.
At the time, what was the feeling towards MacArthur of the average Australian troop? What had the average Australian troop look at MacArthur?
Oh, I think they all thought he was a pretty good sort of a bloke. I don't think anybody realised what actually happened during the New Guinea campaign. He was sitting back in Australia, and Blamey was back in Australia, and they never had a clue what the conditions were like. And I know the some blokes out of the second 16th, they reckon they had done a marvellous job on the Kokoda track, which they did do. And an old Blamey lined them up and told them they were like rabbits. When he said, when rabbits run, they get shot. So that didn't go down too good. Yeah. But he was taking his orders from MacArthur. MacArthur was he was a blood and guts sort of a bloke. He wanted action, and it didn't matter what it cost to get the job done. And I know the seven divvy blokes never had much a very high regard for him, or he or all blokes.
So what were your duties to include in Borneo?
Well, as I said, after the Labyrinth campaign, they went across to mainland Borneo, and I was put in charge of the duck that took all our stores and gear up to Beaufort, and we were navigated across the bay from Labyrinth to Weston by a Royal Navy RAN bloke, and when we got to Weston, he left us and we just headed up the river. We were supposed to have hit Beaufort at around about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but the current was that strong. We were only making about 1 knot an hour, and came nightfall, and we had to decide whether we'd take the duck ashore or get on a sand spit in the river. So I was in charge of it, so I said, we'll get on a sand spit in the middle of the river and then nobody can get at us. And when it came daylight, we set off again, and we hit, instead of being there at 2 o'clock one afternoon, we got there about 12 o'clock the next day. And
You were bringing the supplies for the battalion, were you?
Not supplies.
Equipment.
Equipment, like all their personal packs and what do you call them?
Haversacks. You mentioned, had you not had any actual contact with Japanese at this point, had you?
No, not me.
What was your general feeling then towards these Japanese soldiers?
Oh, well, I never thought much about it. If we come in contact with them, well, we'd get into them. But I know as we were going up the river, we could hear these drums. They went all night while we were on the sand spit. We could hear these drums, and turned out that the natives, like the Malays and that, they were celebrating the arrival of our troops, giving them a bit of a welcome, I suppose they were. And when I got as far as Beaufort, well, I just handed over the stores, and they were unloaded, and And I went back and caught up with the rest of the Pioneer platoon then.
What was Beaufort like?
Well, it wasn't very big. There was a railway station there, which was like a siding. The platform would only be about 30 yards long at the most. And a single line. And I think there was a bit of a spur line that ran off the main line, and if anything was coming along, and they looked like meeting one another, they'd put one on the spur line. And of course, when we got there, the engines were all stuffed. They'd been burning rubber in them instead of coal, and that, and they were useless. And our blokes got jeeps then, and they took the wheels off the jeeps and put railway wheels on them, and that's what they used to use to pull the wagons. And that was one of our jobs, was to on one occasion we were told, this is after the war had finished, we were told that there was a tree across the line, and we had to go up and clear it. We were told that there'd be no traffic coming down, but there would be a train coming up at a later date, like later in the day. So we went out, and we just got this tree cut through, and we did the right thing, put a sentry further up the line, and we no sooner got this tree cut but hadn't taken it off the line, and a train load of NIP prisoners came hurling round the corner. The bloke never had time to give us a signal, and down they came, and the jeeps hit the tree and knocked it off on the side of the road, and because it's buggered up the jeeps. And
what happened to the Japanese soldiers, the prisoners?
Well, they were on the trucks, so they had to wait until another couple of jeeps come up to take them away.
And before we get to the end of the war, you were to experience Japanese troops. Tell us about that experience.
Oh, well, we're in. It was out of Beaufort somewhere. There was two rivers. The Patus was the one we came up, and you had to walk 11 mile to the next one. I think that was the Clears. I don't know for sure now whether that's right or not. But while we were there, making our way across, there was a little Malay bloke. He was the head man of the village. He came to the to our headquarters and told them that there was four NIPs in this. It was a bit of a remote village, and they were harassing the natives for food and that sort of thing. And he said there was four of them, and they had two machine guns and two rifles. So our pioneer officer, he volunteered to send a patrol out to have a look at them, you see. So by then I was a corporal, and I was given the job of taking the patrol. And we got onto an American barge that had come up the river, and I think we had about 10 blokes, 10 or 12 blokes, and I had an Owen gun, and there was three Bren guns, and the rest were rifles, and this little Hadji, his name was, I think they all called Hadji for some reason. Anyway, he said he would lead us to this place where the lips were, and he took us down river and indicated to the Americans the spot he wanted to get off, so they ran into the shore, onto the side of the bank of the river, let the front down, and of course we walked off, and away we went. And I put him out in front to guide us in, and we're going along, and he crossed a stream. It was a stream about yay wide, and he just ran across it. And of course I thought, oh, well, it's only just a shallow one. And I went to run across it, and not knowing that he was on a log. There was a log about that far under the water. He knew where it was, I didn't. And I went straight into the water, up to my neck. And I was soaking wet. Anyway, the rest of the blokes thought that was a hell of a joke, because they come across on the log then, after they see me only fall in. And we must have travelled about a mile, I suppose, along this track. It was a fairly dense jungle, and this little Hadji, he's got a bloody sword as nearly as big as himself. When he got out of the barge, he dived under a bush and pulled out this sword, and he's swishing it around him, as we were going along, we were passing natives, and they were chattering as though they were in Hay Street, or didn't seem to be any danger of any nips around.
Hay Street's one of the main streets in Perth.
Yeah, well, that was just to give you a bit of an idea. We eventually got fairly close, and these other natives, they're still yabbering away, and I'm trying to get them to keep quiet, you see. And when they saw that we meant business, they went on their way and kept quiet. And we got into, and there's a hut in a bit of a clearing, and a section of the roof had gone, and Hadji pointed, indicating that they were in there, you see. So I put half the patrol down that side and half this side, and I put one bloke back at the back to watch our rear in case somebody come along to and surprise us. And I said, well, when the grenades go off, open fire. We didn't wait to ascertain whether they were in there or not, but just as we were lining all the patrol up, there was a NIP officer come to the door of the hut, and he looked around, and he went back inside, because we flattened. And he went back inside, and I let this grenade go. And as soon as the grenade went off, of course, all hell let loose. everybody opened fire, and you had to go up steps, and I raced up these steps to go inside, and he's the NIP officer, he was dead. The grenade had cut his throat, and he was dead. And the other two were there, and they were showing no sign of giving up, so we just wiped them out too. But there was only three. And when all the fuss and the dude had settled down, Hadji said, three. He said, should be four. And we couldn't find anybody else. And then one of the blokes said, I saw him. When I went up the steps, my own gun jammed. And so I handed it back to a bloke by the name of Huey Baum and grabbed his rifle and fixed the other two blokes up. He said, I saw a bloke run. He said he was naked. He said, and he was running along the track. It must have been the fourth one, and he got away. But whether he survived or not, I don't know.
What was it like to be in a situation where you're shooting men in close range?
Or just come second nature. It's either them or you. And I didn't wait to ask any questions. They showed our blokes no quarter, and we showed them no quarter. So, and we went back and reported it back to the boss, Cocky, like our officer, and that was it.
I wanted to know, do you recall the end of the war in Europe?
We did hear that it had finished, but I just can't recall where I was now.
Do you recall the end of the war with the Japanese then?
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about that. What do you recall of that experience?
Well, we're on our way up to a place called Tenom. The 43rd was going to take over from the 28th, and there was one bloke, he'd been talking to some of the Americans somewhere, and he said the Yanks had dropped a bomb on Japan, and he said, the words he used, he said the Yanks said make Flash Gordon look like a sis or something like that, you know, like, and then it was only a matter of a day or a couple of days later they dropped the second one, and of course, it was great. Some of the blokes cheered, and one bloke, he said they should never have dropped it. You know, look, he reckoned it was the wrong thing to do. And I said, well, as far as I'm concerned, they should have dropped it only 6 months ago. And at any rate, then the news came through that the war was over. But previous to that, we'd been coming up the river, and the railway line ran alongside the river, and we got some of the natives come in and said there was somebody on an island in the river, and they thought it might have been Nips, so they sent a patrol over, and they found a kid, about a 14-year-old boy there, and you could smell him. They'd try to cut his head off on the bank of the river, and they'd slashed him, and he'd fallen into the river, and somehow he survived, and he got over to this island, and that's where our blokes found him, and he was putrid, you know, like the wound, you could smell it, and they took him away, and I saw him about 3 or 4 weeks later. And he looked as good as gold. He survived. And
what were your You weren't to leave Borneo straight away. What were your duties after the war, the finish of the war?
Well, when after the prisoners came down, they put the sick ones in on the trains, you know, like in the carriage. Not they weren't carriages; they were just trucks. They put them, and they got a ride down. But the healthy ones, they had a walk. I never had anything to do with that, but. We had to go through and little villages, like there was a place called Tenham. We went through there and... is that blowing on you there? I don't know whether... it was a hospital and there was nurses there. And for the... lavatory, they had a cement slab, and they just used to sit on the cement slab and let it go, and there would be a pool of muck, and it was full of maggots, and that bloody, and how they didn't all die of disease or that, I don't know, but we made them clean it up, and... then we went on to the next place, and it wasn't quite as bad as that one, but they cleaned that up, and when we came back, somebody had got in and done another dollop right on the same old slab of cement that we'd made them clean up before.
So what was... how did the Japanese... and yourselves get on at this stage? The war had finished. How did you treat one another?
well, there was... on one occasion, there was... we had to go out and dig up two American pilots that they'd... executed, beheaded them. Our Padre McCliver, he went out, and we went out as a guard, more or less. He identified these two young American pilots that, when we were coming through, they just executed them, and they got two blokes that they suspected of being the killers of them, and they put them to work in a quarry, and we never had any gear except shovels, so they had two boxes, and they had strung on a pole, and they made them dig dirt out of this quarry and put it in the box, and then manhandle it out on and to make the road with. Well, that was the only time I ever saw them where they were physically mistreated. And there was a couple of places where there was a landslide because the mountains went straight up like that, and now I'm going to be a landslide, and that would make them clean them up. But
what sort of attitude did they have towards you? What were they like in defeat?
Some of them were very sullen, but most of them were. As they were coming, those that were walking coming down the track, our blokes had grabbed them and take whatever, they might have a watch or pencils or something like that. There was one officer that came down, and he said, "What are you looking for?" And the bloke said, "Watches." And Yeah, with that, he just rolled up his sleeve and took his watch off and gave it to him. But they did find one bloke had a watch that had been taken off one of our prisoners in Singapore, one of our blokes. And from then on, I think each tent had a nip, and he was like a batman. They used to clean our rifles and clean our boots, and there was a compound that they were in. They had to go into the compound of a night time. There were some that weren't allowed out at all. They were suspects. On one occasion, I can remember one of our officers who had been in Japan, he said, the biggest insult you can give to a Japanese is to give him a kick in the backside. So he said to Steve Farr, that was our sergeant, he said, you've got to hand out some punishment to this bloke. And Steve come back and he said, well, I want some volunteers to go and kick a nip's arse. And none of us would be in it. So he said, well, I'll have to go and do it myself. And we said, yes, you'll have to go and do it yourself. And they lined this joker up, and then they got the rest of the camp, the rest of the nips, and they all took a running kick at him. Some of them were dinkum and some of them weren't. You could see some of them really kicked him, and others just pretended to kick him. But whether it worked or not, I don't know. But I think...
What were your personal feelings towards the Japanese now that they had been defeated? The war was over.
I just treated them with a bit of disdain, I suppose. One bloke in particular, every time he'd go past him, he'd salute. Well, I refused to salute him. Whether it achieved anything or not, I don't know. Probably didn't. But
at this point, what were your feelings in regard being on Borneo when you could be going home? There was nothing left to do.
Well, we realised that we'd have to wait for... as my brother, he wrote me a letter. He said, I'll forget where he was now. They were on Balikpapan, I think. And he said, our theme song is waiting for ships that never come in. And that's about what we were. We were just hanging around waiting for ships. And then I went back to Labuan. Well, in the meantime, they called for volunteers to go to Japan in the occupation force, and a bloke that I got friendly with, Alec Graffin, he said, come on, he said, we'll be in it. So we went up and put our name in, and we were hanging around for about a week or 10 days, and nothing happened. So in the meantime, I'd decided I'd had enough, and I went up to the orderly room and I asked him if I could take my name off the list. And they said, you can take it off if you can get somebody to take your place. So I knew there was a young bloke, he'd done all his dough playing cards, and he owed money everywhere. So I said, you want to go to Japan with the occupation force? King, his name was. He said, yeah. He said, I'll be in it. And I said, right, I'll come up to the orderly room. I took him up to the orderly room and signed him up, and I got off. But Graffin went, and he reckoned he had the time of his life in Japan. But I wasn't sorry I didn't go.
Did you ever